In Scotland, when friends get together, they blether. When these three friends happen to be Scottish Blue Badge tourist guides, you can be sure that the country that they're so passionate about will be right at the heart of their discussions. Be it contemporary or historical, culinary or cultural, reminiscence or anecdote, from accommodation to zoos, the chat will range right across the entire alphabet of topics and issues that are live and happening in Scotland right now. We hope that you'll join us. There's nothing to beat a richt good blether.
And you could also join in our blethers on social media. You can find us as at Scottish Blethers on both Facebook and Instagram. We post additional content during the week that supports the podcast episode.
We love making the podcast and would love it if you could share them with your friends and leave a review on the platform of your choice.
Hello and welcome to episode 65 of Scottish Blethers. I'm Liz Lister.
And I'm Helen Houston.
And it's getting to that diddly-dee time, Helen, where we're rapidly approaching Christmas. How are your Christmas preparations going?
Well, they're not going at the moment, Liz, actually, I have to say. but the plan and the intentions are very advanced.
Very good. Yeah. Yes. Master of planning. I'm master of procrastination. But it's all quite low-key. But we've been having, you know, a good lead-up to Christmas. I was supposed to be in Mallorca, and that got cancelled, unfortunately, with changing times and our friend Omicron. So it wasn't viable to go. I was going to the Christmas markets in Palma in Mallorca. So instead of that, I went down with my husband to visit our daughter down in London. Scary going down to the big city in these times, yeah. But one thing it did give me the opportunity to do was to have a wander around London, and seeing all the Christmas trees. And of course, the Christmas tree in Trafalgar Square is the famous one, another one that's gifted by the Norwegians. And there's been a lot of controversy about the one in Trafalgar Square.
Yes, I mean, I saw it on the television, Liz. It looked dreadful. But I have heard that it's been replaced since you were there. I think they must have seen your displeasure and they've replaced it.
Yes, it was a bit straggly, as we mentioned, like the Kelty Christmas tree we talked about last week. I went and took a picture of that, which I'll post up on social media. I've been dreadful on social media, just too much going on.
But it's interesting that the Norwegians gifted the trees, as we said in our last episode, but because of trying to be a bit greener, if we're talking of trees, they're now bought in locally. The Norwegians still fund them, but they're bought in locally. The one in Edinburgh is beautiful, Liz.
I haven't seen it yet, Helen, but, you know, to wander around, just to go and just check out all the different types and variety of Christmas trees on show. And we talked last week about how there was a predicted shortage and talk about it. But like me, never one to spring to action quickly. I went to get my Christmas tree on Friday past and they were all sold out just about. It was just a straggly variety that was left. So I managed to convince the man to give me a 7-foot one for a 6-foot one and cut the top off it. Typical Scot.
Did you go to one of the Christmas tree farms or did you go to Blair Adam?
I went to Blair Adam, which is, what is it called? That used to be Forestry Commission, Land and Forest Scotland, is it? Yeah, so I supported our local forestry outlet and went there. And I mean, they normally do have a tremendous selection, but he said that they'd sold 25,000 the week before.
Oh my, well, I'm going to assume that wasn't locally. I'm sure that must have been into shops as well.
I think actually he was talking about £25,000 of business. I was thinking about it afterwards and I think that's what he was talking about. But, you know, it was just exactly as we said, you know, people were starting early. They were trying to bring in a little festivity into their homes. And so they'd gone out much earlier this year. I mean, normally it's sort of the first week, second week in December. But no, since October, people have been on the move.
Well, it's interesting, Liz, because in Salon, as you know, that's the village we live in, for people who are listening, there is a women's group called the NWR, National Women's Register, and they usually have their Christmas party, and it's held in my house normally at the beginning of December, which is actually a great incentive for me to get my house decorated. And so usually my house is all decorated by this time, but because of COVID, we decided that we'd go up to the golf club house and have our Christmas party up there, where we could really feel safer and obey the COVID rules. So my house is still not decorated. As I say, the planning and the intentions are very much in place.
Well, you know well that what I call it, Helen, it's the NWDR, the National Wine Drinkers Register.
Oh yeah, that's so much better because that's exactly what we do, especially when we're in my house.
This is true. So as it's the lead up to Christmas, we thought that for this week's episode, we would look at Christmas traditions in Scotland. Now, most of them are the same as they're global now. Most of the traditions that we have, we sing carols, we decorate our houses, we put up a Christmas tree, maybe a wreath on the door. But there are still some things that are distinctly Scottish.
Yes, and I think that probably, I think the rowan tree is one thing. It's a very Scottish tree that we have. And I know I've got one in my garden, which is supposed to ward off the witches. But as my children constantly tell me, well, it's not working, Mum. But the idea is that on Christmas Eve, you put a rowan log on the fire. And that's to chase away bad feelings sort of, and to give good luck to all your friends and family and stop getting evil into the house.
Yeah, the rowan tree, very symbolic. And I like this idea of the tradition that if you've had any arguments or disputes in the family, it's to chase away any hard feeling between family and friends. You know, it's a time of bringing family and friends together. So that's a good one. Many of our, I mean, we have really a patchwork of all the different traditions that we have. I mean, so many influences, the Druids and pagan cultures and whatever. And we've talked a lot before about the idea of Yule, as it was in the sort of the pre-Christian traditions, where evergreens were brought into the home. So we were talking about that with the fir trees and the Christmas trees coming in. Mistletoe, that's another evergreen.
I like the bit about, we were laughing about this at the NWR Christmas party, about kissing under the mistletoe. And when you kiss under the mistletoe, you're supposed to remove a berry from the mistletoe. And of course, when the last berry is gone, kissing has to stop.
Yeah, I'm sure you've got chapped lips by that time.
I don't think they were assuming that one person was doing all the kissing, or maybe one person standing there and lots of people are coming forward to kiss.
Yeah. And of course, mistletoe, like ivy, they're the only green plants that flower at this time of year. So they were very much seen as a symbol of fertility. So that's where the kissing with the mistletoe came from, a symbol of new life and fertility.
Yeah, and I think that some of the other traditions, Liz, that are good, I like this idea, although I've never seen it myself, but I think we kind of do it symbolically now, is the old woman winter totem pole or totem log that is tossed on the fire to kind of a symbol of the destruction of winter, get rid of it and let's move forward into spring.
Yeah, that's an old Celtic custom, and they would carve out a log in the shape of a woman's face, and that was Old Woman Winter. And then by chucking it on the fire, that was a symbol of the destruction of winters, hoping that sun would come again in summer. So Celtic customs, Christian customs, all coming together in this patchwork. And of course, Gaelic culture as well.
Yes, and I'm not so sure of the Gaelic culture, but through Gaelic and some of the traditional folk music, we have got some very popular carols coming out of the Gaelic culture.
Yeah, and of course the idea of the Holy Trinity, that we have the Night of the Candles, Oiche Tronel, I think it is in Gaelic, where a candle would be put in the window, and of course we still do that, although it might be now in the form of a candle bridge, but you see them appearing in all the windows of the houses round about.
And I have noticed that the price of those candle bridges has come rocketing down. I remember when I first bought one, many years ago, they were really expensive, sort of cherished Christmas decoration. But now you can go and get them fairly cheaply.
Yep, and of course, light and fire in particular is the heart of many of the celebrations. We've talked before in previous episodes about the fire festivals, the Clavey at Birkhead in Moray, where a wooden barrel is burned. We've got them all over Stonehaven, the Comrie Flambeau. So we have all these, and you can go back to previous episodes and hear about these fireball and torch ceremonies all over Scotland.
But of course, Liz, Christmas has it's just a recent holiday in Scotland. We tended to look at the new year, Christmas. I think this was a result of the Reformation in the 16th century, that Christmas and all the celebrations and routines relating to Christmas seemed to be associated with the Catholic Church. So they were kicked into touch along with everything else relating to the Catholic Church. So it's only relatively recently that Christmas Day has been seen as a holy day in Scotland.
Yep, we've talked again about this in last year's episodes, but you and I can both remember, we're old enough to remember, just and no more, how Christmas Day was a working day in Scotland. And it was just one of the normal working days, and it was New Year, Hogmanay, New Year's Eve and New Year's Day that were the major celebrations. So again, check out previous episodes and hear all about that. Christmas Day didn't become a public holiday until 1958. So just a no more I managed to scrape in there.
But actually, it was quite interesting because when I was a student, I delivered, as all students did, delivered the post over Christmas. You know, and my job was on the bus that was hired in to deliver the Christmas parcels, because so many parcels were being sent through the post. And we went out on Christmas morning to make sure that the sorting office was completely empty of parcels. So every parcel that was in the sorting office was delivered on Christmas Day. You know, that was still left in the sorting office was delivered on Christmas Day.
Yep, change days now. I mean, it's everybody trying to get Christmas Day off, you know, the essential workers having to be in there, that we salute them. But of course, like in common with across the world now, we have the traditions leading up to Christmas Day, Christmas Eve in particular, and waiting the arrival of, now in Scotland, we don't call him Santa Claus, he's just simply Santa. So we always refer to him as Santa, and Christmas Eve, we're waiting for him arriving.
Yes, and we have to do certain things. We've got to lay out a nice little glass of sherry or a whiskey for Santa when he comes down the chimney. And of course, the reindeers need to be fed as well. So there's usually carrots set out, and for Santa, a mince pie. I think this is where he gets his very rotund shape from. All these mince pies that he's eating on Christmas Eve or on Christmas morning when he comes down the chimney.
Yeah, I've always wondered who was sipping that sherry and eating those mince pies, Helen.
Oh, it's Santa Claus, yes.
Yeah, so while we were awaiting Santa, hang the stockings up. And again, this is, you know, when I see nowadays, I'm turning into an old woman, but when I see nowadays the sheer extravagance of everything. I mean, in our day, we put up our stocking and you got inside it, you got a tangerine and a sixpence.
Yeah. And we must say, Liz, that the tangerines were very special because they were not in the shops at any other time of the year.
Yep. So there was those traditions, which still, you know, people put in chocolate coins nowadays rather than the sixpence or whatever. But a lot of those traditions are still kept. But of course, for adults, another big tradition on Christmas Eve is the watch night service.
Yes, I really like the watch night service, and it goes back to in my youth when there used to always be a Christmas Eve dance in Bridge of Allen. As you know, Liz, in case you've forgotten, I grew up in Stirling, and Bridge of Allen is about two, three miles outside Stirling. And there was a Christmas Eve dance there, you know, every Christmas. We used to all go out to the Museum Hall in Bridge of Allen for the dance, and then from the dance, because in those days they all finished at about 11 o'clock at night, 11:15, we would walk to Logie Kirk, which was halfway between Stirling and Bridge of Allen, and go to the watch night service, because Logie Kirk had a fabulous choir. And of course, it was just a lovely way to just finish up the dance, really begin the festivities to Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, the church was always packed with people like you on their way home. Rather noisy service, you know.
A noisy service, and really quite a lot of sort of fumes in the air, shall we say.
Those candles were burning very brightly.
That's right, yes.
Still, you know, traditional watch night service, and of course the singing of carols. And many of these carols, as you mentioned earlier, have got strong Scottish roots.
Yes, one of my favourite ones is the one, Child in a Manger, which was written by, in Gaelic originally, by Mary MacDonald on the Isle of Mull. And she lived in Bonesson, and the tune that it's sung to is just called Bonesson. And of course, probably many of our listeners will know it more as Morning Has Broken, which was sung by...
Cat Stevens,
that's right.
But even some of the famous ones that you might not expect a connection with, O Come All Ye Faithful, Adeste Fidelis. I mean, it's thought they found documents in a church in France which suggest that it may have been written in support of the Jacobite Rebellion. So, you know, not many people, not a lot of people know that the roots of O Come All Ye Faithful, yeah. And the Wedderburn brothers, they were famous in the 16th century in Dulce Jubilo, and Angels from the Realms of Glory. It was a Scots-born campaigning 19th century newspaper editor, James Montgomery, that put these words to an old French tune. So a lot of connections there.
A lot of connections. And of course, I think, Liz, we can't leave Scottish connections with Christmas and Santa without mentioning the reindeer herd. They're your neighbours, aren't they, up there?
They are indeed. They are indeed the only reindeer herd in the UK. It's 150 strong, and it just roams free across the Cairngorm Mountains.
Yes, and they're such beautiful beasts, aren't they?
They are
beautiful beasts, and they're very busy at this time of year.
Of course, because they're let out all over to help Santa with his deliveries. So, up in Aviemore, the town, the major town in the Cairngorms, there's a procession on Christmas Eve, and it's lovely as the reindeer lead it through the town.
Yes, I think even last year during COVID, they used the steam train to bring all the children into Aviemore from the surrounding villages, and they were met by the reindeer herd and Santa, which was lovely.
It is, yeah. And of course, in Europe, when you go to across there at Christmas time, Krampus is a big figure, you know, the bad Santa, yeah. the naughty children experience. But we don't have that in Scotland, except there is one tradition on the Hebridean island of Islay, and that is that the dark, crooked one of Christmas, Cromdu na Nolle, the children are told that if they don't behave themselves, you know, that's the elf on the shelf, if he's watching and they don't behave themselves, then that figure, the dark, crooked one of Christmas, will be visiting them. And they're told that the sound of the wind howling down the chimney is actually the cries of this sinister figure. I mean, what parents do to traumatise their children?
Oh my goodness, how could they enjoy Christmas at all? They'd be scared to put a foot wrong.
Yeah, well, that reminds me of my daughter, because we only have one daughter, and she was terrified, quite understandably. So you think about it, this strange man wandering through your house. So, you know, all other kids, your parents talk about them being up at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning. It was like, Jenny, time to get up, Jenny. She was not risking it on her own.
What a shame. Yeah, but we had with the two kids growing up, they just were very good. They shared a room when they were very small, my two, and so they always got exactly the same from Santa. So in the morning it was so easy. They just sat up in their beds to see what Santa had brought. And I don't know about you, Liz, but the tradition in my house was that the Christmas stocking that Santa filled was filled with, you say, with the tangerine, the apple, the money, and just little things that kept the children amused from when they woke at about 4 or 5 in the morning till mummy and daddy were willing to get up thereafter. But it wasn't the main sort of gifts that were at the bottom of the bed. It was just the little things that Santa brought to keep them amused.
Yeah, we had the stockings at the bottom of the bed, but my brother and I, we were up, you know, at the crack of dawn, and we were under that Christmas tree and ripping the paper off everything. Oh. So my father in later years tried to bring in a little bit of discipline that we had to wait until all the elderly relatives arrived, but that was torture.
No, well, we had, just talking about that, we had a very strong Christmas tradition at home that, as I say, the small things were given by Santa at the bottom of the bed. But then when I grew up, I've got two sisters and myself. So it was the three of us, and my granny, who was sort of almost blind, she stayed with us as well. But we had to get up, breakfast first, fully dressed, breakfast. And my father then had to make sure that all the lights were on, the fire was cleaned and lit in the parlour, where Santa came
You're
to the so parlour.
You're so posh, Ellen.
In the parlour, and then we could go in and see what Santa had brought, which was usually just sitting by the tree. And the Santa present was normally unwrapped because Santa didn't bother too much in our house with wrapping paper. But then all the other gifts that were there that had come from relatives were handed out in an orderly fashion. And so people had time to open and show, and other people say, oh, that's lovely. Oh, what is that? And then the list was made for the thank you letters. And then so it went on. So we could take the day, you know, opening the presents. But Granny, I've got this clear vision of the three of us trying to get Granny downstairs. She was dressed, but she had typical hair of those days, which was she pleated and then wound it round, you know, as kind of like earmuffs. But she had the pleats done. They were hanging, and the three of us were trying to pull her, guide her downstairs. So we were all lined up outside the parlour door when we were allowed in.
Were you born in the Victorian era, Helen?
No, but I do like these traditions. And my own family, my children with their families, they still have that tradition. You don't just rush in and grab things. You have to wait in an orderly fashion and let everybody see what each present is and ooh and ah at it.
Good manners, Helen. I'm all in favour of that. Yeah. And, you know, another thing that's typically Scottish, we don't say Happy Christmas. You know, a lot of in English, you know, Christmas cards and things like that, it's Happy Christmas. We never say that. We say Merry Christmas. That's always what we say in Scotland.
I've noticed that Happy Christmas is creeping in, and a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Yeah, it's strange, isn't it?
Yep. And then, of course, it's the big event, the Christmas dinner, after all these parcels have been opened or set aside, as in your case. And our Christmas dinners are very traditional. It's usually turkey that we have. But, you know, that it may be that there's a side of venison or salmon, you know, all the sort of typical Scottish produce.
Yes, I love Christmas dinner, but it's the timing of the Christmas dinner that's quite important as well, because we have to have I like, and my kids do as well now, and when my parents were alive, you have to be clear at 3 o'clock for the Queen's speech, the Queen's Christmas speech on telly. And we used to plan the dinner either, can we get it before 3 o'clock? So we maybe have the main course, the turkey, and then gather around the telly after that for the Queen's speech and then pudding later. Or shall we just wait for everything and start the meal at 3:15 after the Queen's speech?
Yeah, I must confess that we've been getting later and later. And so we're usually watching the Queen's speech before we have dinner now. But you mentioned pudding there. What do you have for your pudding?
Well, we always had trifle, you know, which is, I love trifle. And my mother made really nice trifle. And my grandmother, as I've mentioned before, came from Dundee. And they would come through on Christmas Day, my grandmother and my uncle, who at that time, when we were small, was unmarried. And they would come through and from the dairy and bring cream. So my mother always had meringues made and trifle made. And we had lashings of cream on them.
And I'm sure that there was lashings of sherry in the trifle as well, knowing you and your family, yes. But of course, the other one, you know, Christmas pudding is the traditional one. And we've talked about clouty dumpling, basically a Christmas pudding made in a cloth or clout, and about putting little silver charms inside them. I can remember that well at my grandmother's. So, you know, we get the Christmas dinner over and done with. We enjoy the Queen's speech at 3 o'clock. And then, you know, there's the rest of the day for enjoying. And there's a lot of traditions associated with Christmas that have got Scottish connections.
Yes, I'm just trying to think of some of these traditions. Oh, pantomime, Liz. Did you go to pantomime?
Absolutely. I mean, we have to confess that pantomime is it was an English development. Pantomime is basically what you would describe as a musical comedy, which is staged at Christmas, although it doesn't really actually have any direct relation to Christmas.
It tends to be nursery rhymes or Grimm's fairy tales and things, isn't it?
Yeah, fairy tales, yep. But it's very much developed for family entertainment. So it follows a very strict convention. There's lots of things that are contained, no matter what the story that is that the pantomime is based on, there's always the same conventions associated with it.
And I think people listening who maybe are unaware of pantomime, I think, it's, as you say, it's a very British tradition, that there's always the principal boy in the pantomime, always played by a girl.
Yep, gender crossing. And then we have the dame, the pantomime dame, which is played, so it's usually the hero's mother, an older character in it, and that's played by a man.
Yeah, and they were very, very clever. Even today, you've got people well known for their portrayal of the pantomime dame. And of course, there was, as you say, the structure behind it was, look behind you, it's behind you.
Yeah, very much audience participation. You know, there was always a song, which by the time that you came out of it, it was an earworm. It was going over and over and over in your head, and you're encouraged to shout out. So there's a lot of slapstick comedy and chases round about.
Try a slice of loganberry pie, munch it, crunch it, you'll discover why. The boys or girls all like it when they try a great big slice of loganberry pie. I still remember it.
Usually there is some, with the slapstick, it's usually pies, custard pies getting thrown in faces, or things getting decorated with wallpaper paste and things like that. So a lot of slapstick. But it's very much family entertainment. So although on the surface it's all about children's fairy tales and nursery rhymes and all the rest of it, there's a lot of double entendre and risque comments which are keeping the adults entertained at the same time.
It's very clever writing, because it very definitely is on these two levels, and you know, it doesn't detract from either.
That's right. And of course, the classic ones that are in every pantomime, you've got, oh, yes, it is.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Then you've got, look behind you, where the monster or the baddie or whoever it is chasing. And every time he turns, it's hidden, and the audience are telling him to look behind you.
It's the excitement. I've taken groups of brownies or groups of cubs to the pantomime, the matinee shows, and it's just packed full of what we would call primary school age children, you know, children from about, you know, 5 up to 10, 11. And the audience, they are jumping on their seats. They are so excited because it's all real to them.
Yeah, and of course they're encouraged to participate and join in. So they're encouraged to hiss and boo the villain. Or every time that one of the poor victims is, you know, something happens to them, they go, oh. And this, my daughter, who was, you know, would not speak out, she wouldn't say boo to a goose. You know, I remember her at the McRobert, which is the Stirling Theatre, Helen. We always used to go there for our pantomime. And she's completely enraptured by the pantomime. It was Sleeping Beauty. And poor old Sleeping Beauty is lying in her glass casket. And the prince comes in and he goes, oh, my love is dying, she's dead. And Jenny shouts out at the top of her voice, she's not dead, she's just sleeping, and if you give her a kiss she'll wake up. And so everybody looks, you know. So she didn't do it by halves.
spoiler alert.
That's right. So a lot nowadays is, you know, sort of modern songs written with new words to be incorporated into it. So these conventions, and of course we've forgotten one of the major conventions, the pantomime horse.
Oh yes, I love the pantomime horse. I take my hat off to the people who played it. This is a one costume, two people looking like a horse.
Yep. And it could be a cow or it could be a camel, but it's some sort of animal in two parts, yep. And nowadays, one of the other features of pantomimes is that they bring in the big celebrity guests, which are the sort of the big draw, the marketing stars to bring people in. But that goes right back to when pantomime originated in the 19th century.
Yeah, and you know, but some of the players who are known for pantomime, they are almost, they're big stars in their own right because of their pantomime. Think of Christopher Biggins, for example, the pantomime dame of today. And in the past, people like Jimmy Logan or Jack Mulroy or Ricky Fulton, all pantomime people.
Yep, all dames. Yep, the big character in it. Yeah, that's very true. And, you know, again, thinking back to my childhood, I remember going, my brother was just born, so I must have been about 4, and I went to see Aladdin, and I can remember that absolutely vividly, and a real highlight of Christmas. But the other one I remember was, I was even younger, I was only about 3, and I was watching it on my grandparents' television. You know, so we're all huddled around this little small screen, and it was Mother Goose, and it was Priscilla that lays the golden egg, and Priscilla was dying. Well, I was hysterical. They had to turn it off. You know, I was beside myself, you know, so traumatized by Priscilla the golden goose.
Oh, I know, but it's you know, it's lovely, all these lovely traditions that go on. And I love pantomime, but there's also the carnivals that are on. And I've never been to the Glasgow one, but you have, Liz, I think, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, again, it was the Kelvin Hall in my day. So it's called the Carnival. Nowadays it's called the Iron Brew Carnival. It's held in the SECC in Glasgow and it's sponsored by Iron Brew. But in my day, it was just the Kelvin Hall. And it's all the indoor amusements, just a really festive atmosphere. So it was a big part of Christmas as well. It's actually Europe's largest indoor fun fair.
And of course, as well as Glasgow, Edinburgh has, you know, for quite a number of years, has joined this idea of Christmas markets and outdoor fun fairs. And I noticed this year, Liz, that the George Street, which is one of the main streets in the new town of Edinburgh, has been turned over to an ice rink. You can go ice skating in George Street this year.
Yep, you know, that's they've grown and grown, the Christmas markets and the amusements. They've been really hard hit this year, not just by the numbers attending because of this new Omicron virus, but also because we've had 2 major storms, Storm Arwen and Storm Barra, that have blown in and done a lot of damage. I think at this point, Helen, we should just mention our thoughts go out to our friends in the States who might have been affected by the tornadoes that you've been experiencing, which look absolutely tragic.
Yes, the devastation is just horrific when you see it.
Yeah. On a more simple note as well, something else that's been affected by the pandemic this year, we thought we'd got through it from last year, nativity plays.
Oh, yes. Nativity plays were very much part of the tradition that, you know, children, I remember growing up, we'd have big Sunday school growing up. And when my children were small, Lanbride Parish Church had a big Sunday school. And we were very fortunate in that we had 3 adults in particular who were excellent in producing children in a nativity play. So we had, you know, really almost professional nativity plays. I think I was wardrobe mistress, and even that had to be done professionally. We had to have rails and everybody measured and labelled, and oh, it was fantastic. I don't know how many shepherd's costumes I made that year, but it was a lot.
Yeah, very much a part of Christmas. And this year, many of them are going ahead virtually. They're being recorded so that parents can watch them from home. Another thing that's typically Scottish, because we have so many remote agricultural areas, very often it's real live animals that are incorporated into the play. And that can cause quite a bit of amusement.
Yes, the lamb. So if there's any newborn lambs at that time, but I think in Scotland there'll be very few, but you know, the sheep will be brought in and the cows will be brought in.
And the donkey maybe as well. Yeah. And another thing, you know, for children that's a part of Christmas is a visit to see Santa in a department store. And I don't know if many people know, but it was actually the first ever businessman who's credited with bringing the first Santa into a department store was James Edgar. And although that happened in his department store in Brockton, Massachusetts in 1890, James Edgar was actually born in Edinburgh. So we claim that as Scottish, the first departmental store Santa.
Yeah, and it's interesting because my daughter-in-law sent a photo of my second youngest grandson, Adam, who had been wandering through I think it was Bray Head, big sort of shopping mall near Glasgow. And who should be wandering through but Santa, who stopped to speak to Adam. And Adam's face is just wide-eyed amazement. There's this gentleman in the red suit, knelt down to speak to him in the shopping mall. It's a lovely photograph.
There's nothing to beat it, that wonder of Christmas when the children are so young. It's memories that last forever. And then as you get older, become simpler wishes, like maybe wishing for a white Christmas. And of course, up here in Scotland, we've got 50% chance of having snow somewhere in Scotland on Christmas Day. And the top 3 cities, if you're a betting person, and the top 3 cities where you're most likely to see snow are in Scotland. And of course, up in Aviemore, where I'll be, very high chance of seeing some snow.
Yes, and even if it's not necessarily in your own garden, if you can see it on the hills you around you, that's just equally good, isn't it?
It is, yeah, that cold, crisp Christmas rather than a grey, raw Christmas. You're to get out and work off some of that Christmas pudding and, of course, that sherry and mince pies that Santa left behind them, Helen.
And sometimes he does, yes.
So to sip your sherry, word of the week this time, we thought we would do a traditional Scottish toast that you might, as you lift your glass of wine with your Christmas dinner or your wee glass of sherry, you might lift a toast to friends and family.
And before we do our toast, Liz, it's full of, you know, Scottish words, but there's a couple that perhaps we could explain in advance. You know, it mentions being hale and hearty. Well, that means being strong and healthy.
Yeah.
And the other one is mentions a gurnal. Now, a gurnal, G-I-R-N-A-L, is a storage chest that you'd find in the kitchen, possibly for your dry goods like your oats or your cornflakes even.
Yep, I hasten to say that we don't have gurnals in our kitchen now, Helen, but this is a traditional Scottish toast. So this is going back to the days of keeping your oats and your gurnal for your porridge. Now we just keep them in a plastic canister.
You might, Liz. You might.
I've never tripped over your gurnal yet, Helen. So a traditional Scottish toast. May the best you've ever seen
be the worst you'll ever see.
May a moose ne'er leave your gurnal.
With a teardrap in his ee.
May your eye keep hale and hearty.
Till you're old enough to dee.
May your eye be just as happy.
As we wish you aye to be.
So that's saying, may the best you've ever seen be the worst you'll ever see. May a mouse never leave your cupboard with a teardrop in his ee. May you never have a teardrop because there's nothing there in your cupboard for him to eat.
And will you keep strong and healthy until you're old enough, you know, into your old age. And may you be just as happy as we would love you to be.
So a good wish from Scottish Blethers. We hope you have a lovely Christmas and we'll see you in between Christmas and the new year.
All the best.
Bye-bye for now.
Bye.
And there we have it, the end of another episode of Scottish Blethers. If you'd like to join us on social media, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram as @ScottishBlethers. And if you'd like to leave a review, please do so on your podcast platform of choice. It's cheery bye from me.
Ta-ta the loo from me. And if I don't see you through the week, I'll see you through the windy from me. Bye.
See ya.
Bye.